This is episode number 58 of DevOps Paradox with Darren Pope and Victor Farsic. I am Darren.
And I'm Victor.
And I am awake. And Victor's about to fall asleep because we're recording this in the evening for me and super early in the, or what is this for you? Late at night.
Yeah,
well, this is almost midnight. Almost bedtime for you. So
almost. A couple of more hours and I will be asleep. Jeez.
Okay. So the time we're recording this, it's around 6:30 Eastern. It's midnight 30 at where Victor is. And today we have another guest. Victor, would you like to please introduce our guest?
Yeah, so our guest is Nirmal. I forgot the last name. He will say it probably soon. How do I describe him? He's a conference buddy. Would that fit the bill?
Yeah.
We met in a conference, I don't know which one, and then we met in another and a third and a fourth and stuff like that. And he's a really interested guy that I've been trying to get to speak with us. So how long did it take, Nirmal?
Couple decades.
A year? Couple decades, yes.
In the tech world.
Yeah, exactly. So basically what he did is that he went to speak with all the other more important people. And then when there was nobody left on the list anymore, he said, okay, I can do you guys as well.
My people finally got back to your people. I could get on your schedule. Thank you, Victor.
By the way, introduce yourself for real.
Yeah,
I'm Nirmal Mehta. Can't do it.
Yeah, no worries. I'm Nirmal Mehta. I'm a chief technologist at Booz Allen Hamilton, and I'm also a Docker captain, which is probably the main thread where I've met you, Victor, is through the Docker captain program around DockerCon and the CloudBees, Jenkins world, kind of that world, right? So it's absolute pleasure.
We were the first batch, I think, of Docker captains, right?
Yeah. Like really early on. Probably we were probably already all hanging out before the captain program became a thing. And then they were like, oh, that group over there, like we should just give them some official kind of support.
Exactly.
Well, I'm very happy to be here. Nice to meet you, Darren. Excited to have a conversation today.
So what will the conversation be about?
I have a couple different topics. I'm going to do a little bit of a role reversal here because I wanted to pick both of your brains on some topics today. And the first one is, what do you think drives innovation in a company? Like, how do you create new things? How do you get the creative juices going? Is that something that you both can relate to?
First of all, this is strange. Usually it's us asking questions. This is going now off the rails. But I will challenge that.
Okay.
I will challenge that. I would say that most of companies are not actually doing innovation. They're calling innovation attempts to adopt things that others innovated.
Yes, also called imitation.
Yeah.
So that the idea there is that there is no true... So innovation is maybe one of two different paths. One is you combine multiple existing things in different fields together, or you have an actual true leap in, like, you take an invention and it's like an actual technological leap forward, like a true novel new thing. Is there any other?
I don't believe that anybody ever invents something truly new. It's always improvement on something that we already did before. Right, and I'm not even talking about software industry in general, right? Kind of. But going back to the initial question, what to me is funny when I see, a department in a company says, "We're an innovation company. We are going to install Kubernetes." So, but yes, if we improve something, it's innovation. I do believe that. Just that I don't think that many of us are improving something, but just adopting things.
Interesting. So you don't think that like all these things can be a platform for actual, like I'm not, maybe you have to separate away like research and development, right? Like true kind of just, you know, mixing different chemicals together to, you know, make a coronavirus vaccine or something, right? Like that's, there's true invention there, maybe. There's then the systems that support those, and there might be a combination of like one industry kind of paradigm with IT, and you get some new way of doing something. That's innovation. But what you're saying is like most places that say they're doing that aren't really doing that, right?
Yes. I mean, so let's define innovation. What would be innovation?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's an endless.
Actually, let me ask a real question here. Which is easier to define? What is innovation or what is DevOps?
Innovation.
Okay, good. All right.
I don't know, actually. I mean, I feel like I know sometimes, but it's more like if I see it, it's, I can call it out, right? But it's hard to define when it's, you know, without any context.
Would you agree if I would say that innovation means that you did something new on top of something existing? Doesn't matter whether it's 0.1%, right? But you contribute, you move the needle, right? No matter how much.
Correct.
Yes.
I think that's important. So now the other thing is, in your own roles, you might be asked upon, you know, might be asked to, you know, create something new or move that needle, right? How do you, what's that process you go through? Is there even a process, or it just comes to you? Is it like, you know, sometimes when you hear interviews of artists, some of them, you know, sometimes they have like a, they have an answer where the song just came to me at night, you know, like it's just there, fully formed, whatever. And then there's sometimes where it takes like 20 years for someone, you know, maybe they do something for 10, 15 minutes, and then like 3 years later, they actually do record the podcast, you know, like there's like different speeds of this thinking and creative juices going. What in your own experience is the process you've been through when you've been called upon to solution or create something new or move that needle?
I will let Darin answer that simply because I'm a product manager now. So innovation for me means, hey, you, innovate.
Well, this is important to you.
It's not even that. Yours is you send an email saying, go innovate.
Exactly. So okay. For me, it's easy. So you answer that.
So it gets back for me to doing the work. And innovation means putting your butt in the seat and doing it. It goes back to, I can't remember who the writer was. Maybe it was Stephen King or something. Or no, it wasn't Stephen King. Anyway, it was the concept of, I can't write until I get inspired, but inspiration shows up every day at 8 a.m. when I sit down in my chair. So it's a matter of taking that and doing that work. That's what it's just doing it. And it's just sitting there and doing the grind, or, you know, playing out the old Edison thing. Okay, you know, how many times did it take to get to the light bulb right? Well, I don't know, but I figured out 1,000, 10,000 ways that it didn't work.
So it's sharpening those heuristics so that, you know, the more you do it, the more you sharpen your own heuristics about what paths will probably lead to nowhere and which paths you should take so that you get a little bit quicker at that, right?
Yeah. I'm going to use the A word, agile, but I'm not using capital A. I'm using little a, meaning did this work? Or the other example I use a lot with people is, you know, watch Jurassic Park, the first one, not the other ones because they all sucked, but the first one was good. And it's when the raptors were testing the fences.
Uh-huh.
right? They're just going around testing each part, going around. It's like, okay, I can't get through this way. I can't get through this way. Looks like I can get through this way. I'll come back here again in a minute. Let me go check something else.
Mm-hmm.
That's how innovation in my head happens and typically how it works for me.
Interesting. I tend to agree. I feel like I have the same patterns too, but what I rely on is my skill and talent to be able to get to those parts of the fence really quickly and iterate really quickly. So this kind of loops in with the DevOps kind of conversation, right? So DevOps is about increasing velocity, right?
Well, it depends.
Okay.
let's assume true for a moment.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's suspend disbelief and make sure that's
well, So hold that thought for a second, because I don't want to go. I'm not trying to debate that right now. What I'm trying to say is one of the goals of DevOps is to potentially create a system where that testing of the fence with, you know, in the software realm can happen more quickly or more reliably or, you know, with security and safety in mind or, you know, whatnot, to be able to kind of find those holes in the fence or wherever that innovation lies. And I have a question for you both is, if that's true, maybe, I don't know if it's true or not, but let's assume it's true. Do you think we've, you know, lost something from doing software like more of an old school way by adopting these patterns? We've lost some of that creativity, lost some of that.
Let me try to backtrack for a second.
Okay.
For a second, right? Let's say that...
I thought this is an interesting question. I don't know if I'm leading you on the right path to something here, but...
I think you're trying to lead us to the answer you want to hear.
No, I don't know. I have no answer. I have no agenda here.
But kind of going back to patterns, let's say that I just figure out right now, right? How to light a fire. I just invent a fire, right? By myself.
You're the most amazing person on the planet.
Yeah, amazing. That's absolutely amazing. It just so happened that actually others invented that before me. So is that innovation or not?
Yeah. I mean, not everyone's fire is the same.
But let's say the same.
Exact same? I think it's still important because it's what you do after that that's also important. It's not like it doesn't just stop, right?
Yeah. Because if what you say is right, then those patterns are not that important. Now, in my head, they are extremely important because understanding the patterns and then everything else going on around in whichever segment of industry or works allows you to get to the certain level from which you can innovate without actually reinventing the wheel, right? So for me, understanding patterns, it's true. It can easily put me in a box from which I cannot get out easily and cannot really figure out new stuff because you get so enveloped in what you know that getting out of it and getting out of the box is very hard. But on the other hand, if you don't really know those things, which might prevent you to innovate, but also if you don't know those things, it might actually lead you to the path of reinventing the wheel, which is probably also not the goal. Because if I don't know what others know, then I might come up with something that others already did before me.
And we see that over and over again in IT, right?
Yeah.
Like same things reinvented with slightly different ways. Do you think that's useless?
Same things reinvented over and over again. I have a theory about that.
Okay.
I think that every once in a while we need to reinvent, or I would actually rather say rename things, because the objectives of the things get lost in the meantime, and then we come up with the reinvention of those things just to kind of put people back on the original track. Like to me, a good example would be SOA. I honestly don't see a difference between SOA and microservices. To me, that's the same thing conceptually.
Right.
Not,
not the implementation.
Implementation went terribly wrong. So kind of, to me, my description of microservices is that, okay, so you misunderstood SOA. You went in the wrong direction. So let's call it microservices, maybe reboot of that.
And the API gateway is the ESB. And
exactly, exactly.
And service mesh is, you know, your message queues. And
I had a session today, interesting. The main subject was GitOps, you know, what is GitOps and stuff like that. And to me, that was a similar subject because my explanation was, you know, we know for a long time that everything is code stored in Git or version control. That's a thing that we already know about for 10 years, but we misunderstood. So now it's called GitOps.
Right. But also there's changes though. There's improvements, right?
Absolutely.
And it's just like anything, like Darren was saying, you know, you sit in the chair and you do it over and over again and you do there's some repetition, right? Maybe 99% is the same each time, but that 1% matters. So microservices today wouldn't be microservices without an attempt at SOA in the past, correct? Because there's still message buses, right? Which are actually from mainframe, right? Kind of concepts, which... I mean, you know, conceptually, a microservice is, if you're running them effectively or doing like Lambda in a cloud, doesn't look very different from a high level from a mainframe, like conceptually, right? Where you just have functions and you have queues moving messages around, essentially. And I'm obviously oversimplifying. So there is value in going off the wrong path. Well, I don't want to say wrong path, but getting to where we are today, going down this divergent path is okay. It's okay to get in the cycle. Would you say it's a natural part? It's almost a natural, instinctual part of the industry, right? Or maybe human nature. So at some point, we're going to have this conversation in, let's say, 5-6 years again. Next time I'm on your podcast in 5 years. And we're going to talk about something that is essentially just Kubernetes, but over again, right? I mean, that's the pattern, right? Like, that's what we're saying.
That scenario that you're describing and that Darren is saying, oh my God. Actually, I truly believe that's inevitable. We will be talking years from, sometime from now, we will be talking, first of all, how Kubernetes is horrifyingly bad. How something else is so much better, while essentially it is not much different either.
And I know we had part of the book, we talked in our interview for that, we talked a little bit about what's being called now low code, no code, right? This business logic abstraction. And maybe we'll save this for another conversation another time, but it starts to venture in there because there's all these attempts at, I feel like there's natural wall of where we can't get past in terms of abstraction, right? Like, I feel like the reason why we do reinvention of the wheel on these certain levels and layers is because we can't get above a certain level of abstraction. And there's been many attempts at trying to decouple or abstract away all of the IT problems and only focus on business logic. But, you know, it never really pans out because there's that natural trade-off, right? If you abstract too high, you lose your customizability, right? And then vice versa. So maybe we'll save that for another time, maybe tee up another conversation around that. But I think all these things are kind of linked together, and it's very interesting. I do agree with you, Darren. Like, there is a loop. There is a reinvention loop or a just, you know, brute force almost kind of pattern to innovation, inventing, creativity, that I think a lot of people miss when they just shoot off their email saying, hey, you go innovate. You know, like, it doesn't just appear out of nowhere.
Well, it's how hackers work.
Yeah.
Right. It's a hacker doesn't just like, okay, let me crank up Metasploit and send it at one IP address. Oh, it didn't work. Okay, I'm going to go to the beach today.
Yep.
No. It's like they're going after it left, right. And I think that gets back to, it's either showing people, and this goes back to a conversation that, a reconversation that we had with Yost the other week of, you know, sometimes people don't want to learn anymore. Sometimes people can't learn. Right. Let's put aside the people haven't, that aren't in a situation to where they are in a, we'll use his example from the other time of kids that had a child with special needs. Right. And that's, so there's special life circumstances that are causing you to where you can't do all the stuff you want to do from a career perspective. Completely okay. But that's a choice that has either been forced upon you or a choice you've made. But for those of us that have chosen, yeah, I'm just going to go off and learn. And I'm going to try this and I'm going to keep trying it until I either get good at it or I get bored, as Victor does, gets bored and moves on to the next thing. I want to stay back to the, you were talking about the low code, no code, which is yet just another name for 4GL, for those of us that are old.
I unfortunately don't know what that is, but. It's before my time. Darren's gonna kick me off this podcast, Victor.
Yeah, kind of. You're a teenager.
We'll go back to what we were talking about. So you were asking questions of. All right. So when we first joined our hero, or when we last left our hero, we were talking about low code, no code. Now bring it back to where we're heading. Low code, no code, and DevOps is like, okay, that's a whole nother conversation. In fact, we have a friend that works for one of the big no code places.
There's been so many attempts at that. Maybe I'll come back on after that conversation and we can talk about it. But that's a whole, because even in the interview I did with Victor, I kind of went both ways. I can see how it's very tempting to kind of go down that path of, you know, this nirvana state of, you know, easy to do things in IT, you know, but the reality is a lot more complex always.
One of the things that I believe I'm getting more and more aware of is that it also is greatly related with timing. So like if you stick with no code, low code, or whatever we call it today, I do think that that's actually a good idea. However, all the past experience I had with that was horrible. And that might be because I'm wrong. It's not a good idea at all. Or simply because some ideas are premature. Right? Kind of, maybe it wasn't a good time. 20 years ago when I used Dreamweaver to do drag and drop for everything. I don't know if any of you remember that.
Well, I remember that. Now we're in a conversation, like all that the crazy HTML templates that came out of that.
Exactly. But that does not necessarily mean that, I mean, that was innovative in a way, if you think about it, but premature.
Still a very powerful tool. Still a very powerful tool at the time.
Oh, but you can still download it. I don't know. And I think that's one of the big subjects about innovation. It's not only about figuring out something new, but figuring out something new, an exact precise moment when that something is, you know, you cannot be too early or too late. It needs to be exactly the correct moment.
I don't know if it has to be, or it just becomes the right moment because of maybe the implementation or the ecosystem around it, right? And what's in the Overton window in IT at that moment, right? So, you know, maybe that was a failure of SOA, was that not everyone was thinking in a way of in these units of work kind of paradigm, right? I don't know. Like, you get what I mean? There's like a, what's in the Overton window in IT at that time matters. I bet, you know, like you're saying about microservices just being SOA, right? Microservices can be sold because containers, because Lambda, right?
Yes, exactly.
And that's in the zeitgeist. Like people know what that means roughly, so that you can hook the new old idea, the new old idea, onto what's in what's relevant today. And maybe that's the important piece that tips it. That's a tipping point.
To me, a good example of something that was maybe premature is my favorite, Heroku. I still believe that it was in some ways still ahead of what we have today, right? I mean, Kubernetes, or before that, Docker, and then the cloud and all those. And it was fantastic, and we're still maybe not even there. But it died a horrible, horrible death. Kind of. I mean, I don't know. Is there anybody using Heroku today? Probably not.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there are people using it. And there's tons of, you know, if you want a mask shop right now for the pandemic, you can spin one up, you know, on Heroku or Squarespace or whatever. But and they're also releasing more features, obviously, as time goes on. But I understand what you mean. Like the simplicity, right? The kind of just immediate ability to just run these workloads.
But also combined with that, which I see is the right moment. I think that if Heroku appeared a year ago, it would be a much bigger success than when it did appear. You know, if somebody came up with Heroku maybe a few years ago, right, let's say, but not like 10 or whenever, how many years it appeared, it would be a huge company. It would dominate the world.
Right, but the thing that, so it wasn't Doc Cloud, basically a Heroku kind of company?
Yes.
Essentially?
Yes, yes.
That's interesting. I think another thing that you were just about to touch upon is that the user experience matters. I think we forget about that. And I think that's why Docker was very successful, because the user experience is like phenomenal, especially for the developer. And I also think that's why Kubernetes is really tough, because the user experience is a little rougher from a developer point of view. And obviously that's a big hot topic of discussion these days. But I want to take a step back just from like the Docker and Kubernetes, but just user experience in general for any kind of innovation, I think is super important. And maybe the failure of SOA or the failure of XYZ thing in the past and the reinvention is just wrapping a better user experience around something old. What do you think of that?
Here's the thing that just came to my mind. If you would measure success of something, some innovation, by how adopted that becomes in companies, not necessarily individual users.
So not in the actual success of using that technology to achieve anything, but just by adoption.
Adoption by companies. So I'm trying to distinguish companies and simply users. I have impression that actually the solutions that are very user-friendly do not win.
Hmm. Why do you say that?
I don't know. Like let's compare Docker and Kubernetes and focus only on user experience, right? Let's ignore everything else. Kubernetes wins. And Docker is definitely much better user experience than Kubernetes.
But if you talk to developers who are not making the decision to go with Docker or Kubernetes, then the answer to that is opposite. So that's a selection bias on who's making the decision to purchase something in that company or to adopt something in that company.
Exactly. So, and I actually like that answer, because that leads me to believe that decisions are more often not based on what will the majority benefit of, but rather the few minority making that decision. Yeah, because if you look at Kubernetes and Docker now, again, I'm ignoring everything else. Docker, I do believe that Docker or Docker Swarm benefit higher number of people in a company would benefit from that as opposed to Kubernetes directly, as direct users. On the other hand, if you look at it from the point of view of, let's say, a single department, then Kubernetes wins. Because if you're only and exclusively sysadmin, Kubernetes gives you much better experience, higher return of investment, and so on and so forth, right? So, and so that sysadmin department, hypothetical, let's not stick with that, right? Won over everybody type of stuff. Using only Docker Kubernetes as example, right? And ignoring the whole history and stuff. But I believe that there are many other examples where benefits of the few outweigh the benefits of the of many.
I can say one that's very controversial on this. I would say Jenkins. I mean, think about it. Like, the user experience for Jenkins is pretty rough, right? Like, it's gotten better, but it's not the winner from a user experience perspective, correct?
Yes.
But it's still a winner in terms of adoption because of the people that were the people that had to select that tool for some reason, right?
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
And then it morphs into this, it grows, right? Like, so that decision then, instead of being done in a more design thinking way or a more consensus, you know, proper like systems engineering, you know, requirements gathering kind of way, you know, the tool is there by the small minority group. And then it, because it's then selected and you can't change that, it morphs into this thing that's like a monster of what it was initially adopted for, right?
You mean sort of like a spreadsheet becoming a production database?
I think Excel is probably one of the best user experiences ever, and I think it's going to be hard to defeat that. I'm just going to throw that out there because, I mean, it is almost a universe. Like, you know, it's up there with iPad or something.
I must agree with that because I'm not a user of Excel, so I cannot really compare. But whenever I speak with some heavy user and I ask them, why didn't you try Google, what is it, Sheets? They say, are you kidding me? That's one of those unbeatable products.
It truly is. I saw last week or something, 2 weeks ago, someone made a Excel sheet that controls Kubernetes through Excel. I don't know if you saw that. It's amazing, but
I wondered why when I did see it. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, it's just another poke at the fence, Darren. It's just another poke at the fence.
It is just another poke. Really, a spreadsheet?
Hey,
find something else, please. Anything but a spreadsheet.
I think that might be the future of low code, right there. I'll put a prediction there. It'll be Kubernetes to AWS, Kubernetes to Excel to Kubernetes is the future of low code.
I'm just sitting here stunned right now, thinking he's right.
Just think about it. If Microsoft turned the switch and connected like Lambda, like Azure functions directly into Excel, how many enterprise applications wouldn't need to be needed anymore?
99%.
That day is coming, I bet.
And that extra 1% is just because it's on iOS.
Yeah.
But you can run Excel on iOS. So
anywho, I think I wanted to pick up another thread, which was about learning organizations. Do you feel like you're in an organization when you're talking to your clients and customers? Are they learning organizations? Do you think that matters with DevOps? What's your opinion on that, Victor?
No.
Why?
Because we just need to finish the current project. It is essential. It is, we are having a difficulty to reach the deadline.
So taking the time to learn and to train the people around you is not important.
No, it is, but after this project.
But that never ends.
Exactly, exactly. But it's always this project, right? It's not after this project, yes.
So would an ideal situation be where it's a learning organization? And you're just saying that never, that's not real world.
In a healthy organization, I think that learning should be in part of the job, right? It should be part of daily activities in a way. The same way as I believe that refactoring your code is just as important as writing the code, right?
Right. Or getting rid of some technical debt or
exactly.
Reevaluating what you're doing.
So, but the real issue, I think, is that most of the world is driven by quarterly objectives or project-based objectives. And that really prevents you to work on things that will give you benefits beyond short period of time, right? So refactoring or learning and technical depth, those are all the things that do not give you immediate benefits. And that is directly conflicting with how this world operates, really. Eventually, for a company, and this is very sad to me, and I'm very disappointed, but the thing that eventually companies would rather acquire another company than learn or improve and things like that. It's cheaper. We're going to buy a new company. So if you're a bank, right, and we need this innovative fintech stuff, we're going to buy a company eventually. That's the type of reasoning. But you just need, this is very important, you just need to finish this first. And it's always something.
I wonder if, is it a hidden competitive advantage to be healthier then? Or is there just so much low-hanging fruit, so much, fat there that it doesn't matter?
I think it's directly related with the position you have. In terms that if you're a leading company, then those things bring more obvious values, right? Now, so if, let's say, if 10% of my application needs to be refactored, the need to do that 10% refactoring and the benefits are more obvious than if you say, okay, so look, we're in such a bad shape that actually refactoring obviously would mean 3 years of investment. So therefore, I cannot see a value in that. So, and similar for innovation, the closer you are to being on the top of the chain, the closer you are to really be at the top so that you can truly innovate, the more likely you are to see the benefits of such innovation. But if you're too far behind, then those things sound not so pleasing or beneficial.
Interesting. I tend to agree. And I think that is the paradox, right? Is when all this stuff really hits the real world and business motivations and realistic markets and all that in capitalism, at a high level, it's a real challenge, right?
If I'm right in what I just said, that would truly be a paradox, because that would ultimately mean that the more there is a need to innovate or the more there is a need to remove technical debt, the less likely you are to do it.
Yeah. And that's why I asked the question in the beginning. That's what I was trying to get to, is that there's this inherent weird conflict. I know if you have any economist listeners, it's a bad analogy, but the company is in a weird Nash equilibrium where they know they need to do some things to get to a certain point, but there's no incentive to do that, right? Like there's not enough of an incentive to do that. It goes against their short-term rational behavior, leads to long-term irrational behavior.
I think that short-term rational behavior actually is very important, because if you need 5% of your application to be refactored, then actually you can do it on a short term and see the benefits. I believe that many companies are locked into that thing, we are in such a bad shape that there is nothing anybody can do to make this better. So let's not even try.
And then that just makes it worse. but then you just acquire, you think you can acquire your way out of that, or you try some other scheme to get out of that position, correct?
Yeah. You acquire a company and then you put that company into your existing structure and then you destroy that company instead of improving yourself.
It's a sunk cost fallacy, unfortunately, because really at any moment during that, it is always worth it to just reset, because it doesn't really matter that you've spent X amount of time doing something. It's always worthwhile resetting, but you can never, that's a really tough sell, right? Like that's an impossible sell to a leadership that's short-term driven.
It's also partly not realizing the loss. There are some studies that say that if you go gambling, right, the more money you lose, the more you will believe that gambling more will actually make you win.
Right, the gambler's fallacy.
Exactly. And I think that that somehow applies to also what we're doing, is that you will continue pouring money into something that you know that it is actually a loss.
Right. It's a sunk cost fallacy.
I didn't know it's called like that. I thought I just invented it, but...
You didn't.
I'm not innovative as I thought.
Yeah. So sunk cost fallacy is exactly what you're describing. And it is, I would say it's, you know, top five cognitive biases that humans have. It's related to the gambler's fallacy, which is what you were just talking about, where in gambling, each event is independent of the last events, but that, you know, emotionally, it does not feel like it's independent. And that's where the fallacy happens. The same thing with sunk cost. Like, you know, if you tie your identity or you tie some money into something and it goes the wrong direction, it's actually better just to change direction and just pretend you never spent any money on that. But emotionally, it's very hard to detach a leader. You know, a leader can't just detach themselves from that wrong direction. The engineers can't detach themselves from that wrong direction. Money was spent, but from an economic rational standpoint, you should change. You should just pretend like you never spent anything and start spending the money on the new way. But it's very hard to do that. It's almost impossible for an organization to do that. And successful technical leaders are able to change that, right? Are able to politically navigate their organization to do that. But that's a very tough thing to do, right? That requires, you know, very like hardcore, you know, leadership, if you will, right? So I think we've done a full circle around that paradox now, you know, the cornerstone of this podcast. I think I was trying to loop us around that a little bit, because I think it's fascinating. And what frustrates me, and I think that's what one of our initial frustrations were back in the day, Victor, is that, you know, we go to these conferences and we listen to these talks. I'm not talking about the technical talks. Those are always great. But, you know, kind of more of the, you know, these big tech companies, and this is how we did things. But it's almost like a different universe, right? It has nothing to do with, you know, my customer base, your customer base, the typical enterprise. Like, there's such a huge disconnect between, or a technical divide and philosophical divide and leadership divide between, you know, these tech companies that, you know, quote unquote, do things very effectively, and then the rest of the IT industry. And the paradox comes from translating all that, you know, to the real world, right? What's interesting though is when you start to peel back the layers, you realize just how dysfunctional everyone is, you know, you know, to an extent. And I think one message I would like to say to your listeners is, if you feel like you're behind other places, if someone seems like they're doing really cool things, they probably are, but it's missing the context of the bigger picture, right? Maybe they are the market leader. Maybe they have a monopoly in that space. Maybe they have a different, you know, revenue model, and et cetera, onward and upward. And that's not put into the context of why they did the things that they did, right, Victor?
I would rather say that everybody becomes eventually dysfunctional.
like entropy in the universe?
No, it's rather that maybe the speed with which our industry is moving is too high so that nobody can really keep up, and the advantage will almost always be with the newcomers. So if I just start a new company without the... So the speed is so high that everybody generates baggage, legacy, right? Kind of technical debt. Everybody. Absolutely no exceptions. And that includes the unique, kind of shiny beacons like Google and stuff. So if you... And when you account that speed of moving forward and generation, inevitable generation of technical debt, then maybe actually the world always belongs to new companies. Kind of start from scratch, but based on the existing knowledge, right? Maybe that's how our industry is destined to work in a way. Die and be replaced with somebody new. And then somebody new will die and be replaced with somebody else.
Interesting. Very interesting. What do you think of that, Darren?
He's asleep. I think death is a good thing. No, I'm awake. I'm barely awake.
Oh, wow.
What do I think about it? I think you're right. People think this goes back to our very beginning point, very beginning question, innovation. How does innovation work? People are born, people die. That's innovation. Right? The next person comes along and does the next thing.
Fighting against entropy.
All right. Wow. I feel like I've said this the past few episodes. It feels like we just got started.
Yeah.
So you'll have to come back.
Was this the kind of content you were looking for?
Oh, this is awesome. I love it.
I feel like we're just warming up.
I don't ever know what kind of content we're looking for. That's the thing.
And let me tell you that Darren is very happy because every time we have an episode and I don't swear even once, he's happy.
It makes my life so much easier.
Exactly.
Family friendly.
I didn't swear yet.
Yet. We're not done yet. Well, it's not... Okay, so yes, it's family friendly, but if you're driving around in the family van and you've got your kids in and you're listening to this podcast, you need help.
Where's the...
I love you, but you need... Yeah, you need help. That is the paradox. Your kids don't need to be listening to this. But we want it to be safe enough so you can take it into the boardroom or into the conference room.
Right, or share it with whoever.
And share it with other people and not have people freak out. We already say enough incendiary things anyway, so we don't need to add swearing on top of it. Well, right now, if you are listening via Apple Podcasts, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. All of our contact information, including Nermal's today, is going to be found at... Well, his won't be on devopsparadox.contact, but his information will be down below in the show notes. And if you want to be notified by email when a new episode is released, you can sign up at devopsparadox.com. That sign-up form is at the top of every page. There's links to the Slack workspace, the Voxer account, and how to leave a review in the description of this episode. And I've already determined I suck recording late at night. I'm much better at 5 o'clock in the morning.
That's what makes us work so well, because I'm also very good at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, but you're still awake then. You haven't been to bed.
You need to tell me. I feel so bad now. I feel like I'm not getting the full Darren Victor experience. Like, do we need to reschedule this for 5 in the morning? I could do that.
No, the difference is that I'm good at 5 o'clock in the morning and then I go to bed.
I will have just gotten up at 3 o'clock to be ready for the 5.
Oh, I see.
Oh, dear. So Nermal, let's finish this up the real way. What is innovation? You spun it to us. I'm going to spin it back to you. What is innovation? You have 30 seconds. Go.
I believe innovation is the combination of disparate ideas, disparate industries, different, sources of information, new ideas combined to create an additional new idea. And then sometimes, very luckily, a true invention or technological leap is added into the mix. And innovation is really doing that combination of things iteratively at high velocity to make, you know, future progress for mankind or humankind.
Man, you're good with words.
I can already say that this is not that he's thinking aloud. He thought about this before.
Nope. I have no notes.
Oh.
That was off the top of my head.
You're really good with words.
Thanks. That's why I'm a consultant.
That's why you're a consultant, because you're good with words. That's where I've gone wrong. I'm not good with words.
Do you want me to record that again?
No, you're good.
Okay.
Unless you've got it word for word. If you say it again word for word, we know you're lying.
I don't even remember what I said.
Okay, good. All right. Now you are a real consultant.
I feel like I should not have said mankind. I should have said humankind. That's the only thing.
It's okay. You just said humankind. Yeah. We're not trying. Hey, look, we're offensive about a lot of stuff. And in fact, if you listened to last week's episode with Tracy, you know that was the very first female. We've got to talk to Tracy, by the way, and get some more people on. Of different,
I think you need everything. To get Laura on this.
Which Laura?
Oh yeah, Laura. She changed the last name. Now she's Laura Tacho.
It's Taco.
Taco. Yeah. Taco. Taco. Nobody knows. Yes, that one.
Oh, that Laura. Okay. All right.
But now we can use this opportunity to kind of, since this is being recorded, we can force Nimral to join us Friday 6:15 live
tomorrow.
Yes.
Tomorrow.
Yes.
Let's see.
Well, so here's the deal. This episode comes out on June the 3rd.
Oh, the day after my birthday. How about that?
Happy it's your present. To
you. It is my present.
This is your present. So then, okay, so maybe we can have you on this week, which is not this week, but...
Oh, because there's enough time in between?
There's time. Dude, I have to edit. Not that I edit a lot, but I still have to... The editing is easy. The transcription is hard.
Oh, you do it yourself?
I do it myself.
Oh, man. Let me know if you need help with that. I'll help you.
Tag, you are it.
Oh, no. Why did I do that? Why did I do that? I'm your guest, Darren.
Hey, you're part of the family now.
So, Darren, how many hours we have of material, not only podcast, but in general, to be...
I just meant about this recording.
No. You committed. You're committed now. And bear in mind... bear in mind that the main problem in transcribing things is me, my broken English.
Oh, I know. No one understands you. That's why no one's fired you yet.
Exactly. They don't know what I said.
Exactly. They don't know what you're saying. Is that 6:15 in the morning or 6:15 at night tomorrow? And is that Eastern?
I don't know. What are we doing? I don't remember. No, we're doing it Friday. It's tomorrow. Okay, we're recording on Thursday. I don't even know what today is.
Today is Thursday.
Today's Thursday, May 14th.
Right.
This episode is releasing on June the 3rd, okay. Wednesday, June the 3rd.
Okay.
And then we have a live stream. Of course, you're listening in the past, so you could go back on YouTube and watch this one. Do you want to be on the live stream tomorrow? Yeah, it's at 2:30 Eastern.
Tomorrow.
You want to be on that?
Oh, 2:30.
Eastern. That's the problem. You'll probably have a day job tomorrow. That's my lunch break.
How long?
Hour-ish. You can just drop in if you want to. This is going to be on the podcast anyway, so you're still listening to this. So we're breaking down the fourth wall all sorts of which ways. So if you're still listening to this right now, thank you, but just hang out for a second more, then we'll finish up. Can you do it?
2:30? Yeah, I can do it.
Okay, I'll send you the information. Okay. That being said, we're going to have a live...
Who else is on there?
It's just me, Victor, and you. That's it.
Okay.
That's all we can handle. That's all the internet can handle, I think. So if you're still listening to this, go back to YouTube, watch the recording. In fact, by the time I should be able to get in the show notes, you can go back and watch the recording of this that sort of happened live 3 weeks ago. That's it.
Time is
up. Thanks again for listening. Hey, that's it. That's it. Everybody quiet. Let me finish. Why am I being so mean? Because I'm hungry. I've had Pop-Tarts today. That's all I've had to eat today. Deep breath. Thanks for listening to episode number 58 of DevOps. One more time. So much time. Here we go. Last time. Thanks for listening to DevOps. Okay, really? Can I really do this?
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Go away.
Okay, that's a great way to end it. Thanks for listening. See you. Bye.